Members, I'd like to call this hearing for the Jobs and Economic Growth, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, March 16th, 2022. We do have a quorum. Members, we have two bills on today, and I'm really excited about the first one. Senator Franzen, we have Senate File 2351. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. And I'm very excited to be live in a hearing room with robots. And that alludes to the first bill that you have in front of you, members, and it's Senate File 2351. And it's not a new bill to our Senate chamber and our legislature. I've been hosting an event over the last 6 or 7 years now. We're going to have the next one in a few weeks here, STEM Day at the Capitol, STEM Advocacy Day at the Capitol. And this bill came from those many years of coming to the Capitol and educating members about STEM programs in our schools. And as many of you know, and I know Senator Pratt, Chairman, you know this because you were in the school board and one of your teams is here, that many of these teams are very much volunteer-based organizations, extracurricular, and some of these teams have won national awards here in Minnesota and have gone to a national level. So it's very exciting to share with you the next version of this bill. We passed in 2019 a bill that gave money and funding for robotic hubs, and we put $100,000 for 5 grants around the state to build these hubs. And one of them is in Senator Champion's district, the Mura Hub, and I've been there many times, and it's a fantastic example of what other communities across the state have done. Basically, in that case, the school district has actually allowed them to lease a space that was vacant, and they have set up a robotic hub. And what that is, members, if you think about hockey, where you have a field and you practice hockey, I guess you don't call it a field, but sorry, Senator Housley. Maybe football, you have a field. Ice rink. And you know, you have a place where you practice your sport and your trade. And in this case, these teams would have to makeshift their practice area at their schools and then set them back down and put them back up every weekend. And some still do. So what this is enabling these communities is to have a matching grant where they can have a hub and it's regional so they can come up and practice. So you have a delete all amendment in front of you, and it came through suggestion made by the First Upper Midwest in consultation with DEED. The amendment changes the fiscal year. We're trying to add more money to this program and then allow it to be not just for new hubs but for existing hubs to continue to function and operate. So this is to sustain the robotic hubs, and as you know, I just mentioned, $20,000 is about the average or the amount of money that is used for those 5 grants, and a total of $100,000. And these are up and running around the state, and we've done 5 grants already. We have testimony in a short future here that you'll hear about where that money went to. And as you just heard, I've been a supporter of STEM robotics for many years, and the last 6 years working with the Hall of Fame award winning Edina robotics team, Go Green Machine, and its First Upper Midwest to advocate for first teams throughout the state. We have world-class first robotics competition teams in Minnesota that help students gain STEM skills and build experiences that can lead them into STEM fields. Students are more likely to go into a STEM field once they have participated in first robotics, and these hubs have helped students across the state grow their STEM skills. I was just talking to students from Prior Lake. All of them are seniors, and if you ask them individually where they're going to school and what they're studying, it's all STEM, and it's very impressive. In 2020, following a competitive RFP process, DEED sponsored grants to assist with the establishment of competitive robotic hubs, and they have been awarded to organizations in the following communities: Minneapolis, Becker, Byron, Duluth, and St. Paul, so all across our state. And after the RFP, each community found a location to set up a practice facility for teams in the area. And also, given the pandemic, which brought some difficulties with students, including some of these teams, to keep them active in this sport, we've seen students benefit from the practice at some of these facilities. Even throughout the pandemic, there was probably some of them, there was the only interaction they were having outside of everything else being closed. These practice facilities are important for the 190 first robotic competition teams in Minnesota. Just as hockey, football, and basketball teams have dedicated practice facilities, now high school robotics teams are benefiting from similar resources. I have testifiers here from the Edina High School robotics team who will discuss the importance of the bill along with students from Prior Lake High School, and both teams brought in their robots for a demonstration for the committee as well. And I will hand things off to the Prior Lake team to start with their testimony.
Thank you, Senator Franz. And before we do that, I'd like to take a motion to adopt the A1 author's amendment. Senator Rarick moves the A1 author's amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. I'll take it in whatever order you want. We had Mr. Guzik first, but maybe we could get Mr. Guzik, Mr. Prajapati, and Ms. Caldwell. I believe I've got those three from Edina. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait, hold on one second. So first I have Mr. Ramirez, Ms. Wyant, and Mr. Lawrence. I'm sorry, I missed a section. So if we could get...
So we're starting with the Edina team, Mr. Chair.
What?
We're starting with the Edina team then.
I guess that's what's on my agenda.
I'll roll with it.
Hi. Welcome to the committee. Just please state your name for the record and feel free to begin when you're ready.
Hello, my name is Samuel Ramirez, and I'm a senior at Edina High School. I want to initially thank you all for the support in the past. It has been extremely beneficial for the sustainability and the growth of the FIRST Robotics program in Minnesota. I am here in my role as co-captain of Edina Robotics FIRST Team 1816, the Green Machine. Our mission is to create bold, confident leaders who can transform culture to promote, value, and celebrate STEM, and we hold each and every member to the core values of respect, trust, inclusivity, commitment, and joy of life. I joined the team starting as a build sub-team member after being on FIRST Tech Challenge, which is essentially middle school robotics, for 3 years. Now I've been on the high school varsity team for 3 years and was previously the business lead. I help run the presentation team, and although this may seem weird that I'm not helping build robots, to me, it is important to increase the benefits that our community may receive from our team. Our team's work in completing extensive community outreach is what allowed us to become a part of the FIRST Hall of Fame, where there are only 31 out of approximately 3,500 teams worldwide. From sponsor presentations, fundraising, community outreach events, and building various components of our robot, I've learned so much. I think a few of the most impactful aspects of our team that have become prevalent through such events are the culture we nurture, the work and courage and fluency in speaking, and our attentiveness to inclusivity. In what feels like 3 short years, I've become comfortable in any format of speaking when previously my words and thoughts usually came out jumbled. On top of that, I'm now proficient in leading a large group of people with many different specific tasks to be completed at a time. And the development of my overall dexterity has all been guided by the time in FIRST Robotics and the overarching STEM opportunities in our state.
Hello, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to the committee.
I'm sorry, can you get closer to the microphone? Thanks.
My name is Venna Wyant, and I'm a sophomore at Edina High School. I joined FIRST Robotics Competition Team 1816, the Green Machine, in the fall of 2021, and I am the business lead. I grew up surrounded by robotics as my brother participated, and initially I resisted the idea of robotics because I didn't see myself in a technical role. So when in elementary and middle school STEM programs like FIRST Lego League and FIRST Tech Challenge, I focused on recording our technical developments through the engineering process and the business plan. Throughout the years, I came to understand that robotics is more than robots, and there was a place for me. I've written numerous stories for our team's website, written grants to fund girls' events, helped write the business plan, contributed to the team's annual SWOT analysis, and we won the Entrepreneurship Award at our last regional for our team's organization and sustainability in Duluth. During my short time on the team, I've been pushed out of my comfort zone. I'm no longer limiting myself to non-technical and business contributions to the team. I'm in build sessions and gaining confidence with my technical skills as well as my speaking and presentation skills. In Duluth, I stepped into a drive team role. Our drive team is 80% girls. Drive team is all about communications, both with our own team's drivers as well as other teams in our alliance. We practice these skills at MURA, the Minneapolis Urban Robotics Alliance, which is one of the hubs that you have supported. MURA is amazing. We have a real practice field just like fellow athletes on basketball courts and football fields. I cannot imagine not having a practice field to try new things, make mistakes, and get ready for competitions. When was the last time you heard about a high school football or hockey team taking to the field with no practices? Even though robotics is an MSHSL approved sport with a state championship with around 200 high school teams competing at the highest level of FIRST Robotics, Minnesota's high schools don't have practice fields for robotics. Without these fields, teams show up at competitions without the opportunity to drive or practice shooting the robot. The practice fields that you have funded give us the opportunity to run the robot under competition conditions before even going to a competition. The practice fields also provide an opportunity for better funded and more experienced teams to help those who are less well funded and have less experience, which strengthens the robotics program in Minnesota as a whole.
In the actual competition, we play robots 3 against 3. So it is important to learn how to cooperate with your alliance partners, as well as to learn how to play offense against your opponents and how to defend against them too. These are skills that need to be practiced before competition, not learned while you're in one. MURA, which is used by Minneapolis and West Metro teams, allows teams the opportunity to play with and against other teams in a practice setting, so we can learn how the robot is working and how to play together before we take to the field. This shared time is invaluable. It allows us to share the knowledge with other teams and is one of the reasons Minnesota teams are able to make such a sophisticated robots. As an example of how important it is to be able to practice together, our most recent event, Minneapolis event in 2019, we were on the winning alliance of 3 robots with teams from Washburn, Minnetonka, and Minnetonka High Schools. These were 2 teams we had practiced with, whose capabilities we were familiar with, and in whom we had confidence that we could work successfully together. We won because of the teamwork that had been developed at MURA.
We hope that other teams around the state get these same opportunities so we as a state can compete at higher levels and can become a force at the national level. The funding that you have provided in the previous grant is valuable to teams all over the state, and we support the current proposal for additional funding. There's a role for everyone in robotics. I want to see more students who look like me. I am already thinking about my future in STEM and how I will apply what I have learned in FIRST, and doing so by majoring in biology.
Similar to Venna, my future ahead of me will be filled with many STEM opportunities as I plan to major in cybersecurity and a minor in computer science. Thank you again for your time here today. We appreciate the opportunity to speak to our legislator about this important topic and the impact your funding has had on robotics programs in Minnesota. We would be happy to answer any questions after Prior Lake goes through and everything too.
Okay, thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Sarah Franson, did we have somebody from Prior Lake that wanted to testify?
Yes.
Come on up. Well, thank you guys. Appreciate your testimony. And
yeah, I need to switch.
Welcome to the Jobs Committee. Please state your name for the record and then feel free to begin when you're ready.
Hello, my name is Jacob Kurkowski. I'm a senior at Prior Lake High School and head of control systems for Team 2169, King Tech. I've always shown a great interest in robotics, and FIRST especially. I've been involved with the program since I was in fifth grade. I remember showing up on my first day on King Tech and just asking what department had the fewest amount of members and needed the most help, and I was met with the response of electrical, and that's what I decided to do, and I've been hooked ever since. I think FIRST is just an incredible program, and it offers so much to all the students that participate in it. I specifically remember the first time I ever got to see our robot power on and work. It had been weeks of soldering and crimping and running wires through tubes, getting our hands cut up and screwing nuts onto bolts and cutting and riveting and filing and drilling. And after all of that work, we finally got to see the robot light up and move. And that feeling is just indescribable. It's like you have butterflies in your stomach. It's the greatest feeling that I've ever had. Just a collection of metal bars, wires, and motors that a bunch of high school kids threw together in a broom closet had become a functioning robot. It's absolutely incredible. Now, that robot may not have performed as well at competition as we had hoped, but the feeling still sticks with me to this day. And I want nothing more than to allow as many people as possible to experience that same joy. That ability to get so excited over something because you did it. It's your robot that you've built. You've put in all of this hard work to make something amazing. Robotics has changed my life forever, and I would not be the same person I am today without the skills and experiences I've gained through it. FIRST provides a great community that allows like-minded individuals to come together and do something great. Some of my favorite experiences from robotics are when we get to interact and work with other teams. You get to hear all about their robot and how they solved specific problems and various shenanigans they've taken part in. And you also get to see the various different environments that teams work out of. I've seen teams from libraries, teams that were working in parking garages, and teams like us that are just working out of an empty room in the school. And like us, there are many teams throughout the state of Minnesota that do not have access to a full field until their first competition. And that can make it rather difficult, especially when it comes to driver practice and being prepared. And we hope that there will be a time in which all teams will have equal access and opportunity to build the best robot that they can for competition. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello, so my name is Lydia Allison, and I am a senior at the Prior Lake High School. I've been part of King Tech since my freshman year, where I joined as part of our business department. After working closely with the upperclassmen on my team, who encouraged me to start pursuing STEM, I began branching out. I quickly discovered a passion for all things that came along with the physical aspects of the robot. This included all the fabrication, assembly, quick fixes, and honestly, all the in-betweens that helped to make up a robot. I spent hours upon hours trying to learn everything and anything I could. Even though I didn't have a lot of prior experience in robotics, with such a supportive team, I was able to find a home and actually become one of our captains this year. Being part of this team has uniquely prepared me for the world of STEM through its balance of an engaging, supportive, and competitive environment that will only continue to open paths for me in the near future. The FIRST organization provides an ideal platform that is uniquely specialized in facilitating the learning for all those who enter its program. Though we do compete against other teams, similar to many sports, the atmosphere that FIRST is able to create allows for lasting connections amongst these different schools instead of just a direct competition. This mindset is actually able to encourage teams to learn, work, and perform together in order to create something that we can all be proud of. Having this opportunity in high school has set me up for success in the future, building a confidence I wouldn't have gotten anywhere else. Honestly, because of this team, I feel prepared to start facing many of the other challenges life has to offer, both in and outside of the industry. Robotics teams are able to act as a stepping stone for the ever-developing world of eSTEM and clearly demonstrate the value of a team. The one-of-a-kind experience I've had on my robotics team further gave me the inspiration to continue pursuing STEM in post-secondary education, as I know it is done with many others. Unfortunately, as of right now, being part of a robotics team isn't yet a universal experience that everyone has the same accessibility to. Only through an active effort will we be able to give every student the same opportunity to build something great. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe we can ask Mr. take questions for the students.
So I got to turn this on.
We'll take questions for the students before we bring up Mr. Lawrence. Does anybody have any questions for any of the students? Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. And more of a comment than a question. I just wanted to, how proud we are to have you guys here. This is real world. I'm a business guy. I'm all about the economy and jobs, et cetera. And as a country, we're behind. And our manufacturing capacity isn't what it used to be. We're going to have to rethink how we do things moving forward. We have a labor shortage right now. It's going to get worse. In 4 years, it'll be worse. We're going to need to think outside the box and get creative on how we do everything, every aspect of our existence as a country. So hope you guys are ready to step up, because we're going to need you.
Nothing like putting a little pressure on them there, Senator. Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank you guys, not just for what you're doing and what you're learning, but for being here today. You know, not only are you, not only have you personally benefited from something, but you're here today to advocate for the people who come after you. And I think you should feel incredibly proud of that. One other thing to ask you, though, and this is a question that Senator Rarick asked me to ask you before he left, and that's when you do your display, when you actually do the robots for us today, Senator Rarick asked that you aim at Chair Pratt. Just make sure that's on the record. But Senator Rarick said that. R-A-R-I-C-K.
I'm not surprised. You know, quick question for the students. So, you know, I think all of you are seniors. Is that correct? No. You're a...
She's a sophomore.
I'm sorry, a sophomore, you said?
Sophomore, yes.
Okay. So were you interested in robotics before you found the club, or kind of what drew you into it? So yeah, the microphones move. You can move.
Yeah. So I think I started in elementary school. Actually, I founded my own Lego robotics team, and then since then I've been in robotics, working together with that. And I think it's mainly from my parents, and that they're both engineers, and so it sparked the I want to build something. I want to do this. I want to do this. But it ended up developing more towards a business standpoint. But I still like that's where it came from. That's where I think. Yeah.
Anybody else?
Yeah, so when I joined my freshman year, I didn't have any prior experience whatsoever. So just, and I remember just going to the first time I like ever saw a robot and just going there, and I was just blown away and just knew this was something I had to do and had to be part of. And that was honestly the best decision I've made.
My brother was an alumnus from the team, and I just remember getting to tag along to come to the big world competitions with the team and just being blown away, even just as a bystander, a spectator. I was just so happy there, and I just knew that the feeling would be so much better when you were actually a part of the team and you actually get to contribute.
Yeah, similar to him, my brother was on the team, and so I kind of found it through that. And my mom runs the FTC, the middle school program. But I mostly started on the business side. I thought that if I would be interested in STEM, since I was a girl, it would be evident early in life. But recently, I've been more interested in branching out and trying more of the build aspect and technical skills. But I'm still a sophomore, so we'll see what happens in the future.
And Ms. Allison, I think you mentioned you were more on the business side of the team. Maybe you can explain the different aspects of the team and maybe what the business side does, because I've been to the competitions where I've seen the kind of the head-to-head and the teamwork that was mentioned, but I think you guys are more behind the scenes. And if any of the, you know, any of the other students have had a chance to work on kind of the non-competition side.
Yeah, so I actually started out with the non-business side because I, freshman year, had no experience whatsoever. So the reason, and I was still hesitant to join, but I had this amazing upperclassman who just still encouraged me to try. They started out, you can just go and take photos. And then from there, you're able to do so much, because there's so much that actually goes into the robot besides the physical robot. You have to make a business plan. There's a bunch of things that you can submit. It honestly, you're able to act and like function as like a small business, basically. You have to reach out to a bunch of different companies. You have to get funding, absolutely everything that goes into it. And I know you guys can talk more about that too.
Yeah, it's the same a situation where we have like four different teams, sub-teams on our team, and it's like the programming team, the building team, the business team, and then we have like a competition separate team. But it's each team in combination that helps build the robot. It's not just like the build team building the robot that's what shows up. It's like the business is what's running the submissions for awards, for robotics awards, for business entrepreneurship awards. And then there's like the programming team that runs the other backside of the robot that actually makes it work and everything. So many different parts.
Awesome. Are there any other questions for our students? Senator Hurd.
Yes, thank you, Chair Pratt. And I really appreciate, Minority Leader Senator Lopez Ransom's, even during this busy time, as her being one of our leaders, she's still very committed and passionate about, fighting for robotic young people, robotic team like this. So thank you for you bring this legislation forth. My question is to the young members, the students here. How long does it take our lifetime here to build an Iron Man suit? Is it going to be next several January, 100 years from now, or just a...
So we were planning for Thursday.
Thank you. Good answer.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, too, I'll just add that I got hooked, too, and I just got an email a week or two ago from my kids' elementary school asking for starting a Lego robotics team, and I obviously had to sign up for it. So this is all volunteer-based, as you well know, and it takes a village, and the folks that are behind the team are parent volunteers. Some of them are graduates of some of the programs, come back to mentor, and a lot of them have engineering skills. I do not, but I will certainly use that lifeline. But it really is something amazing to watch when you go to the fields and go to the competition. I've been to many of those, and it's just fantastic. So now I'm hooked with my two little boys. They're going to be in Lego robotics and hopefully someday be in the championships too.
Well, thank you, Senator Franz. And thank you, students. And I think we're going to see you guys here again for some demonstrations. But I'd like to call up Mr. Lawrence to testify on the bill, and then we'll move to the demonstrations, and hopefully you guys can stick around till the end of the hearing, and maybe we can get some members, get some pictures with the kids and their machines. So welcome to the committee, Mr. Lawrence. Please state your name for the record and feel free to begin when you're ready.
Thank you. My name is Mark Lawrence. I've been a mentor for the Adana team for 17 years. I'm a National Woody Flowers Award winner, which is for exceptional mentors. I sit on the FUM board, and I've been involved very intimately with all the hubs that were created, the five hubs that were created with the last funding that we received from the state. I really wanted to give you just a quick update on what has happened with those hubs. As you're aware, we bought five fields. Unfortunately, those fields were delivered in February, right before we shut down for the pandemic. Byron, which had a new STEM center and put a field in their new STEM center, were able to use theirs. The Arrowhead Robotics Coalition up in Duluth, they had a retail space outside of the school facility, so they could use their hub also. And then we had the Hmong Academy, which unfortunately didn't finish their STEM center until just a little while ago. Their field is up and running now. Mira was ready to be installed, and unfortunately the Minneapolis Public Schools wouldn't let us into the building. And then finally Becker, they lost their first round of funding for their makerspace, which has now been funded, so their field will be up and running very shortly, as soon as they get the building built. The interesting thing about the hubs is really that they've served as a catalyst around STEM activities, particularly FIRST activities, And I can give you a little indication of what we're doing. Both Senator Franzen and Senator Champion are aware that we've been able to get additional funding from both industry and foundations to help fund these fields. So it serves as a community catalyst. So in the case of Mura, we're getting funding from both Boston Scientific and Seagate. We've applied through FIRST for a diversity inclusion grant. And we've also got a partnership now with Minneapolis Public Schools, and I have a lease agreement on my desk that'll give us a long-term availability of that facility to build it out for both LEGO League, FIRST Tech Challenge, and FIRST Robotics. We've been able to make a relationship with two groups that serve underserved kids. One is called Create Minneapolis, and they work primarily in FIRST LEGO League and FIRST Tech Challenge through the Hope Academy. They will be bringing students into Mura for both LEGO League and FTC, and we're hoping those kids graduate and move on to FRC programs. We're also working with the Minnesota STEM Partnership, which is active in both St. Paul and Minneapolis, aimed at primarily underserved students, and we're gonna house them also in Mura. So we really look at the Mura facility as a sort of our penultimate goal. You know, if we can get it going here, we'll be able to get it going in the other five locations, and they'll serve the community as a whole and bring in cooperation from businesses in the area, and they also are going after additional foundation funding. So I just wanted to thank you for that, getting us started along those lines, and I think we're well under our way. Getting this next round of funding would help. You know, one of the probably the biggest problem we have is facilities. The fields are large. They're 30 by 60, you know, and the typical space to run a field's got to be like 50 by 100. Those facilities are hard to come by. So anything we can do to help these teams maintain, equip, lease those spaces would be helpful. And I would be happy also to answer any questions you have on the prior funding for those fields.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Lawrence? Mr. Lawrence, just real quick, how did you determine please explain the process, like if somebody wanted to apply for these grants, sure, or how you identified.
So we actually put on an RFP, and we stated what the boundaries were. We had to have matching grants. You had to have a fiscal entity that could, you know, get the money and transfer the money and pay into FUM. FUM is our local 501c3 that runs the program. So we ran a competitive bid. Each of the proposals were read by an outside person, and we awarded the five grants. So, and we'll probably do the same thing this time. You know, making sure that we've got the matching grants in hand and working very closely with the auditors.
And Senator Franzen, I noticed your bill, you have an equal split 50-50 between Metro and Greater Minnesota. So I'm sure many of our members appreciate that.
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, and if I may, we have three more spots. If anyone, we can make this bill very bipartisan as well. I know you've been supportive in the past, and this wouldn't have happened without your support in the first initial round. So we want to acknowledge that. And I would also like to say that Mr. Lawrence is being very humble, because this is his creation and his vision, along with others that supported it. But I remember meeting with him and talking about this as an inception of how can we support this program statewide. It's not cheap to do this, but at the end of the day, to Senator Dreheim's, seeing that vision of what the benefit would be for our state, we have the state of Michigan actually has a more robust program that funds robotics statewide. Obviously, they have their industry support there, but there's not to say that we don't have the same competitive demands with a Medtronic, with 3M and other companies here in Minnesota, that this is something that would definitely benefit our workforce long term.
Okay, do we have any questions? Well, and Senator Franzen, you know, one of the pillars of our committee is not only to prepare people for the jobs of today, but you know, to look forward and prepare them for the jobs of tomorrow. And all you have to do is look at these kids and the amazing work that they've done to know that that we're moving along that line. Sarah Franzen, any, we're going to lay your bill over for possible inclusion. I'm sorry, Senator Draham, I didn't see you. Go ahead.
Sorry, Chair Pratt. I just wanted to thank the kids once again. I'm being dead serious when I say we need your help. We really do. But not only is this good for STEM, which is really important, but working together, working as a team, working with people maybe that you wouldn't normally interact with, that's real world. And we need more of it. So thank you. Thank you for your instructors. I know it's a lot of time dedicated to spend with the kids and practicing. I witnessed some of the events in the past. I know it gets to be long days. So thank you for all the instructors out there too.
Thank you. Any closing comments?
The closing comment, I think Mr. Chair, Senator Draham alluded to, these students, the Prior Lake team I just talked to before, I just met, and I asked them how much time they put into the robots, 3 o'clock to 10 p.m. every day, through January through April, and that this is their time to do this work, and that is commitment. Mm-hmm. And that is their parents, their instructors, their mentors. That is commitment, and they're doing this because they love it. And there's definitely the competition, but I'd be remiss, the teamwork that is happening right now. We want to attract more kids to do this. This is definitely a win-win for our community. So just want to say thank you as well to all those students that are putting in the time for these robots to come to life and sharing that experience. And hopefully we'll attract more engineers and more STEM throughout our state. Thank you again for hearing our bill, and we'll go to the demonstration.
Absolutely. So we'll go ahead and lay Senate File 2351 over for possible inclusion. Invite our students up to demonstrate their robots. I don't know if you've got it coordinated yet, but I think some of you have wireless microphones to talk through it. So.
You can hear me okay? Okay. Wait. So, just a brief overview. Can you guys? This is our robot, and this is Fire Lake's robot, Morian. And
thank you.
Morian is from this year's challenge. Every year, there's a new challenge. Like this. Okay, got it. So, Maureen is this year's challenge, and Zodiac is the last 2 years challenge, and COVID year extended the challenge for 2 years. They are very similar games. Zodiac here shoots, picks up these yellow 6-inch foam balls and shoots them in a goal about 8 feet off the ground. And then over here, thing where it shoots up into a hub in the center of the field.
How it works is we have this
a lot of power and field here. We'll come pick it up. So we have an intake with the motor on the front. And basically, once she gets it enabled,
it can make some more hang on the field and
left trigger. Here. Well, let's see. I had to say, well, sorry. That's your button. Benny, you don't need to do anything. So sorry about that. That was just some miscommunication, but it picks up the ball. And then as Bennett just demonstrated, if a ball was in there, it would have basically shot around 40 feet. It could have hit any wall from where it is from right now. So
remember, it's got
an yeah, we forgot about that part. And I'll pass it over to you to kind of describe how your robot works.
So our robot, as stated, is Morian, and it works balls in a very similar way. Yeah. And so pressed air to push our intake down to fold over, and then we have some wheels that spin the first half of our, and then we have a feeder area. We can then spin up our side out of either our left side or our right side. So if we could spin one up a little bit. And then we have a panel that the ball sits on top of that is also on a pneumatic actuator that will push up, and that will push the ball into the spinning wheel, which will launch it out of side, and it makes a very satisfying noise when it does it. You got it?
So
with four train motors on each side. I'm assuming
we also have four motors, two per side. We are geared in a way where we have a lot of torque, a lot of pushing power. We also have pneumatic gear shifters. So just like your car can change gears, our robot can change gears. We want to be in high gear or low gear, go faster or slow.
So the red robot, that's the work that you've done just since January?
Yeah.
Wow. And now, if you guys were to be on the same team, how would you work together? Like, would you work on picking up the balls differently? Would somebody be blocking another robot from getting in your way? How does that teamwork work?
So there's multiple strategies. There's an alliance of three teams per alliance. So let's say the 1816 King Tech and the Gator, there's another robotics team.
One of us
would be playing defense
against the other alliance, while the other two robots are shooting the balls into the hub. And then when endgame comes,
which is the last 30
seconds of the match, that's the time where the robots
can climb.
And this is last year's robot, so there's not a climber, but this year's robot has a climber.
And if you want to...
So this year's climbing is not just hanging on a bar. It's basically a set of monkey bars, but they're at an angle upwards. So there's a bunch of bars that are horizontal at a diagonal, and we have to go from one to the next to the next. So in order to do this, we have a climbing system with two arms that can angle and are telescoping. So they'll extend, they will hang on the bar. These will flip back as the bar gets pulled down and flip back onto the bar. So we will then hang on these. These will then go back up, angle back, and they will reach the next bar, which we will then pull in. These will then be pulled off the first bar, and we will be hanging from the second one, and we just rinse and repeat.
And the robot, when it's at its highest point climbing, it's about 4 to 6 feet off the ground. And Northern Lights, our competition, last week or the week, my dates are messed up, but our robot actually fell 4 feet, and so we had to repair it. One of the main reasons why our robot's not here today, so unfortunately.
But we have this one to show off,
so.
There are also a lot of cool things that are kind of hard to notice mechanically, but that the robot's doing on its own. There are a variety of sensors that let us know how full the balls are with air, because they're going to be slightly different in a competition.
How well you can shoot, how precisely you
sensor that allows you to know how cool the models are, what color the models are. We also have sensors that let us know where it is in our indexing system. We have these two things on the side here. These are cameras that will track a piece of reflected tape. So we can use the shape and angle and distortion of that tape to figure out where we are relative to it, how far away we are, and what angle we are. And they've got tape over them because they're dipped right.
Can see that.
There's also a neural network running on this robot that allows us to look at balls on the ground, determine what color they are, and how we need to drive towards them to pick them up and shoot them.
Can you explain just real quick what a neural network is?
That's a good question.
I've actually worked with them, but just for the people that are maybe watching us.
It is a form of...
This is more of a programming thing, but I have a basic understanding. It's a form of processing information that is similar and based on how our own brains work. There's a series of neurons. You basically make an array of different nodes and... It's a way of computing that your brain uses, and it's how a lot of artificial intelligence is doing
it. It's algorithms and programming, but it's not in a linear fashion. It can go from node to node, and as you said, it's the basis for some of the more complex machine learning type of technologies we're seeing. I used it when I was in the fraud world. It was an up-and-coming technology, but it's fascinating. And now on the Edina robot,
fraud, yes,
financial fraud.
I thought he said fraud. Yeah. I was fraud. Googling, what the heck is
that?
Fraud, like
oh, no, not frog.
Fraud.
All right. Come on, guys. All right.
So I'm gonna have you use this
microphone. Okay, and we can pass it back.
Yeah.
Okay.
So can we see them kind of run across and will it
sure.
Shoot the balls too high for this room?
Or? We can shoot this ball. I just have to. If we shoot it that way, it won't hit anything.
All right,
so
let's do it.
Unless you want us to shoot at, we'll shoot this way first to show you, and then if you want to catch one, you can come up, get up, and catch one. Let's see.
Senator Matthews, you were a receiver in high school, weren't you?
Okay, you want to give it a shot, Neil? So we don't have it at max power, but it can shoot pretty hard when it is.
Okay.
We could also shoot balls. Our balls shoot a little bit more upwards than theirs do, so we hit the ceiling a little bit earlier. Just watch your heads.
There's a ball in the index.
So, while we're doing that, how did both teams do last year, since it was a two-year competition?
So, you want to shoot first, or? Before COVID shut everything down 2 years ago, 1816 got first in the Duluth Lake Superior Regional, and then we got back in the shop and that shut everything down, so there wasn't anything further than that. That was also the year we were supposed to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. It's been postponed now 2 years to this year, so hopefully we can get inducted this year way down in Houston. And then
how did you guys your alumni can come back too.
Pardon me, what did you say?
I just said hopefully your alumni can come back too.
Yeah, hopefully. That would be awesome. We have some of them. We have a couple of them already coming in the shop and helping us since this year robot Zap, its name is. It's very similar this year, so they're helping us with the robot this year and mentoring us, and so it's really fun seeing them, working with them as when they were students, and now they're mentors and helping us out. It's just a great experience. You want to give it a shot, or?
Let's take a shot.
What side are you shooting at him?
You're going to die.
Could you move out more? Kind of more where they are?
They were kidding when they said aim at me.
What was that power percentage? That's about half power.
Two stories?
Wow. We're going to go in.
Should we do a pushing war? Oh, yeah, no, don't do that. Yeah, we'll break the carpet. Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Does anyone have any questions about the robot or specifics of how anything works?
I have questions.
Go ahead.
Seeing that reminded me of college physics class. Do you guys incorporate physics into your computations? And for those of you that are sophomores, I mean, that's pretty heady stuff. How do you do the academic portion? And do you have mentors for that, or is it part of your classroom work?
At least for our teams,
I'm currently taking AP Physics in high school, and we start with the mechanics side. So the stuff I learned in first quarter, I've already applied to calculate the trajectory. So all we need is those little sensors on top that are green, shine green lights when the tape's gone. They'll give us a distance input from what we're trying to shoot to. And then from that, we can simply put it in the equations I've written up, and it will give us basically the exact RPM we need with a couple assumptions about friction and stuff like that.
Cool. All right. I'll just do it from here. Oh, yeah, sure.
Hi, I'm Kaylee Caldwell. I'm a sophomore, and you guys are talking about balancing academics between school, between robotics. Is that what you asked? Sorry.
No, that would be fine to answer that question. I was just impressed that a sophomore, that's not a sophomore class. How do you guys manage the academic? There's definitely some academic stuff here as well as trades and programming, and how do you accomplish that part?
Well, at least from what I've seen so far, we have a lot of people that are sort of like specialized in that type of stuff. We have two of the girls that aren't here right now. They do umpty-ump. So they do a lot of, they've done our calculations. They calculated how much weight one of our gearboxes and gears could maintain. So like they helped design a gearbox for our newer robot. Just like some people somehow have that knowledge, and we use it. And if we don't know, we either pull in a mentor that knows that, or we figure it out ourselves from what I've seen so far.
And to expand on that, we've done like a lot of calculations specifically on our new robot, which is really new for us. Some of our mentors are taking these classes in college. They're alumni of the team. And it's like, this year I'm taking Calc 3 in school, but to see these equations that I'm seeing in class being used in real life on a robot is really, really cool to me. It's like, we calculated moment of inertia for a flywheel to figure out how much weight we need to put on our flywheel to make sure it rev up to speed enough time, and we were able to get the perfect weight by doing these calculations, and it's really cool to see them being used in real life.
Cool.
And just to add on to that, if you're asking how like the knowledge is shared amongst the team, how it's learned, a lot of it is having all four grade levels represented on the team. So you're going to have freshmen and sophomore learning about all of these things, being taught by the upperclassmen, juniors and seniors who are taking those more advanced classes in school. And that's why COVID hit our team especially hard, is because it broke up that chain of knowledge transfer. But that's a huge part in how we keep things like that, those calculations going on the team, is we have, there's always that, those levels of people teaching each other.
Thank you.
So to follow up on Senator Johnson Stewart's question, are you ever in class and have an aha moment? Oh, that would be great for the robot. Oh, yeah.
Probably more time thinking about the robot than thinking about the actual class material.
I've actually designed most of the parts while in class, not the best thing to admit, but so these plates here are shooter plates. Basically, all of these plates are actually custom designed and custom cut on our CNC router in our shop. And so basically we design all these parts, like the intake parts, these elevator parts here, the shooter parts, and then we send them down to our CNC router to cut. This one I didn't design on Zodiac because I was a rookie on the team, but on Zap I've designed a lot more parts, and I've designed those in classes and then sent them down to the lower shop to be cut. So have you had any?
Mr. Chair, I have another question.
Sergeant Stewart, go ahead.
How much do these robots cost, and how do you cover the cost of them? I'm guessing there's some schools that don't have a machine shop at their disposal. So generally speaking, what are they costing, and how is that part funded?
So yes, I can attest to part of how much they cost. Each robot has a price limit of about $6,000 of excess parts, and that's like, they can cost up to that much. And some teams really do put that much stuff on there, and that doesn't count the electronics and the various things on it, because all the electronics on these robots are based off real-life control systems from Allen Bradley and other companies, and so they are industrial components that cost a lot of money. And we do get discounts on them because they are through FIRST and we are a high school team, but it still doesn't make them super cheap.
I just want to quickly touch on that. A lot of teams actually build two robots at the same time. And so for this year's robot, we built two at the same time, so that's 6,000 times two. And our team, we do a lot of budgeting on the business plan and a lot of work with our information that goes in. FIRST actually asks for a budget, and they ask for certain information that tells them how much money we're spending. And I say our team is around the price range of a small business. That's how much we spend on the team and how much we fundraise and how much we work together to make our team function.
And I can speak a little bit more on not every team having machining capabilities and such. We recently were fortunate enough to receive a CNC mill from our school because it was broken and they didn't know how to fix it. So a couple of our seniors from 2019, they cracked open the computer, started messing with the circuit board, and got it working, and the school said we could have it. But before that happened, we had to utilize other companies. We'd have to outsource parts to them, so we'd send them files, and then they would send us back the parts. And that could be a little bit troublesome because we'd have to either commute back and forth between those companies or wait for very long turnaround times, which when you're on a tight schedule can be very unideal.
And just to give you a scheme of what things cost on a robot, this little motor right here, that costs about $180, just that one motor. We have about 12 on this one, 18 on Zap, and we've actually built two of these. There's other things like a sheet of Lexan, not this size, but a sheet of that, about 4 by 8 feet, costs around $200. So stuff adds up really, really quickly. Or like even the pneumatics to power the solenoids, that little guy right there, that's $60. So it really just adds up quick. And yeah.
So Limelights each are 400.
Yeah, Limelight, you just said Limelights each are 400, and those are these here. So those are each $400. just to sense the goal and do all that calculations to shoot it, not accounting for any of the other mechanisms of the robots.
You know, I just wanted to add, we're building a shop at Mura. So we've been getting funding from Seagate specifically to put in equipment. So that will be a community resource. And we're going to put in the capabilities. Actually, we already have capabilities that are much better than most of the schools. And we're going to continue to build on that. It's being headed up by the guy that ran the lab shops at 3M. So we've got one of the industry experts building that shop out for us.
Members, we're going to get on to our next order of business, but I want to thank our students, and maybe you guys can hang around if anybody's got any additional questions. We'd love to follow up with you, but we have to hear Senator Matthews' bill, and Senator Matthews, this is a tough act to follow. So thank you, guys. Did you have a closing comment? I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, I'm just holding
it. He said he's just holding it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you, guys. We appreciate your time. We appreciate the demonstration and your testimony. And thank you so much for spending your afternoon here at the Minnesota Senate. We really, really appreciate and very proud of you. When we see things like this, we know that our future's in good hands. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, Senator Osmick's not here. We can do it. All right, Senator Matthews, do you want to?
Don't tell him that it's me.
Members, next we have Senate File 3715, Senator Matthews.
Mr. Chair, I did not bring my robot with me this afternoon for my bill presentation.
We see cool things here on the Jobs Committee. And Senator Matthews, did you have an A1 amendment?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I've got the wrong bill in front of me still. Hold on. So, Senator Dreheim, would you move the A1 amendment?
So moved.
And, Senator Matthews, this is your first stop?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All those in favor of the A1 author's amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. Senator Matthews, to your bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this bill is an effort to help with our host communities with the Community Energy Transition Grant Program for areas in my district, like Becker, that is the site of the Sherco facility, and other members here that have similar types of plants in their district. This bill is helping get at grant programs for help as these communities get ready for different transitions away from their operating plants and onto other endeavors. So with that, we've got my former colleague, Mr. Simonson, former Senator Simonson, here to discuss the bill as well as a few other testifiers.
Welcome to the committee, former Senator Simonson. Please state your name and feel free to begin when you're ready.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Chair Pratt and members of the committee. It is good to be here. My name is Eric Simonson. I'm a lobbyist now with Flaherty and Hood. Today I'm here representing the Coalition of Utility Cities in support of Senate File 3715 as amended. The coalition is made up of several cities across Minnesota, as Senator Matthews described, that essentially host large power plants in their districts that are slated to or are potentially going to be closing over the course of the next several years. And I want to thank Senator Matthews for chief authoring this bill, and I also want to thank Senator Housley for joining with Senator Matthews in support of this bill. Mr. Chair, members, these communities are facing the significant financial impacts of major energy plant closures within their individual communities. While they are experiencing a variety of closure timelines, The one thing that is consistent with all of them is the huge impact on their operations from the loss of revenues once these plants cease operations and are retired. Economic development is a key component of the mission of this committee. You collectively spend hundreds of hours each legislative session trying to apply policy decisions and appropriate funds that will aid in developing strong economies all across Minnesota. In this particular case, there are differences and there are significant challenges when existing communities are forced to redevelop broad areas within their communities, and that is what this program is about. The 2020 legislature created this Community Energy Transition Grant Program and appropriated $2 million from RDA funds. For that effort, the coalition is exceptionally grateful. Last February, grant awards were announced for the City of Becker, City of Granite Falls, the City of Monticello, the City of Oak Park Heights, and Sherburne County. They are all either beginning or continue multi-year planning and redevelopment efforts. Mr. Chair and members, Senate File 3715 contains a few changes to the grant program, born and supported mostly from lessons learned through the initial round of grants awarded. Section 1 of the bill expands the definition of eligible community to include the communities linked to the Prairie Island nuclear plant. Section 2 eliminates the need for a competitive grant process, primarily due to so few eligible communities, and allows DEED to accept grant applications on an ongoing or rolling basis, much like how the Greater Minnesota BDPI program is administered. This will streamline the process for both DEED and the applicants. And Section 3 is a $5 million appropriation from the general fund. You may recall the 2020 appropriation came from the RDA funds through the Energy Committee. Not all of these eligible communities are within the XL service territory, so 100% RDA funding is problematic with respect to grant eligibility. Mr. Chair, the coalition has two additional testifiers. We've got somebody from the City of Becker online, followed by somebody from the City of Monticello here in person.
Thank you, Senator Simonson. It seems like you have experience presenting bills. Once. thank you so much. So we'll go to your online testifier. Which one do you want to go first?
This should be, Madam Chair, this should be Marie Flipson from the City of Becker.
Perfect. Go ahead, Ms. Flipson, and state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Pratt and members of the committee. My name is Marie Flipson, and I'm the Community Development Director here for the City of Becker, which we are a coal host plant community. We greatly appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of this Senate file this afternoon, and especially thankful to Senator Matthews for carrying this important legislation. This bill will appropriate $5 million in fiscal year 2023 to the existing Community Energy Transition Grant Program. We, along with several other host communities across Minnesota, are facing these major energy plant closures in the near future with significant loss of local property tax revenue and the high-paying jobs that are associated with it. Our community, along with others, are focusing on the planning, design, and subsequent infrastructure and program work needed to mitigate these negative impacts. When the program was created in 2020, it was accompanied with a $2 million appropriation for the community grants. City of Becker was a recipient to one of those grants in the amount of $455,000 for sewer and water infrastructure improvement designs and the plans that will help grow the Becker Business Park to not only attract but grow business to help mitigate the effects of the power plant closure. We're extremely grateful for that award and even more grateful that the committee is considering the continuation of this program and the amendment today that would extend the 2020 deadline appropriation. The $455,000 that we received has been extremely impactful with our design efforts for the new infrastructure to support our business expansion and attraction goals that really have been cornerstone to our transition plans. The 2020 award helped us kick off a very large design undertaking, and the additional time proposed through today's amendment would really allow us to be able to complete that project in full without the potential for losing any of those grant funds due to some unforeseen delays and running into that statutory deadline. We would like to thank the DEED staff for their involvement in the grant process and the positive experience we have had working with them on the application and the award process. We look forward to continuing our efforts in coordination with DEED. Although we were successful in the first round grants, our efforts do not end there. Our economic transition is very complex, it is a heavy lift, and it is ongoing. So these additional resources are needed to keep the momentum and the transition going. The list of energy plant communities in Minnesota is very small. We support eliminating the competitive grant process for so few eligible communities exist. I feel it's the state's interest to support each of these communities and their ongoing economic transition efforts. In closing, Chair Pratt, thank you, and members, thank you for partnering with not only the city of Becker, but all of the communities affected by similar plant closures as we navigate through these complexities and the important economic development efforts underway. If there are any questions, happy to answer. Otherwise, thank you again for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you. Next, we have Ms. Leonard from Monticello. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rachel Leonard. I'm the city administrator for the city of Monticello. Very honored to be here to speak about this important piece of legislation. Monticello is home to XL Energy's Monticello Nuclear Generating Plant, which makes us a host community of significant size and impact. In supporting this legislation and by modifying the language and by appropriating funding for the Community Energy Transition Grant Program with this bill, you are maintaining a crucial component of the larger efforts that host communities are undertaking to confront and mitigate the devastating economic impacts that can come from the decommissioning of a public utility. It is impossible to understate how important the nuclear plant is to our city. Monticello has steady residential growth. We have a thriving commercial and industrial sector, and yet XL Energy continues to provide half of our tax levy, more than half, every single year. The city is proactively striving to diversify our sources of revenue, but our limited options, there is simply nothing that is robust enough to reduce our reliance on property taxes and by extension, our reliance on the contribution from XL Energy. 2022 is an excellent way to illuminate this. The valuation of the plant decreased by about 7%. As a result, the city reduced what we plan to increase our levy by. We usually do about 4.5%. We dropped it to about just over 2.5%. However, we do still have residents that will see nearly a 10% increase in their property taxes this year. Through those annual changes, the city feels a lot of responsibilities to adapt. However, that is a much smaller change than a full decommissioning of the nuclear power plant. And as a result, we cannot confront that without state support and without having a strategic plan that can be implemented over time. Our application for CET grant funding in 2020 that was awarded in 2021 focused on this actionable strategic transition plan that has a systemic approach to allow us to try to compensate for the loss in tax base as well as the loss in jobs that would come from the eventual closure of the nuclear generating plant. The application process was simple, but it also required us to justify our need, to show how we were going to use that funding, and then to fully articulate the final deliverables and their value to our community. We were awarded $500,000 that we have used for a strategic transition plan that has a variety of components that have been executed over two phases. We're very, very thankful for DEED staff as they've helped us through this process and making sure we've largely followed what we intended to do with our application materials. But throughout this process, we've learned along the way that there were some adjustments that we needed to make to get the greatest value out of it. And they've been incredibly supportive in helping us do that. As we near the grant completion this spring, it's become startlingly clear that an economic transition of this scope requires extensive ongoing efforts that additional grants would help facilitate. Host communities face a variety of challenges spurred by decommissioning, and it takes a multifaceted approach executed over time to effectively meet these challenges. Appropriating the funds that this bill would allow goes beyond a single year, and it supports host communities as we try to adapt in multiple ways with a level of complexity that can't be completed in a single year and can't be completed with a single project.
understanding this complexity, we know that all host communities are facing the economic disruption of decommissioning and that all of them should be able to access the grant funds that have been so helpful to Monticello. The number of qualifying host communities is quite limited, making the competitive nature of the grant unnecessary. The language of the legislation is already providing parameters of eligibility that we feel like is necessary. In addition, the host communities in our state have a very cooperative relationship with each other. Most of us are a part of the Coalition of Utility Cities. We are leaning on each other and learning from each other at the various stages of this decommissioning process. By removing that competitive element, each host community can utilize the funds in a way that's most effective for their community, and we can continue to foster collaboration that's crucial for statewide success as we start to look at what these changes are going to mean for our local communities, our regions, and the state. So thank you to Senator Matthews for authoring the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for hearing this testimony today. We appreciate the support for both this grant program as well as those larger efforts as we try to support host communities with this difficult transition planning and what's going to be necessary for our state moving forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And last on our list is Ms. Fitzke. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Pratt, Senator Matthews, and members of the committee. I'm Jamie Fitzke, Director of Legislative Affairs at the Center for Energy and Environment, or more often known as CEE. CEE is a nonprofit based in the Twin Cities with over 40 years of energy experience in research and development, program implementation, policy, and community outreach. And we fully support Senate File 3715. In 2019, CEE led a Minnesota host community study with the support of the Coalition of Utility Cities. Through that study, we worked with six different Minnesota power plant communities facing retirement in the upcoming years, and several of the unions representing the men and women who work in those plants. That study highlights the complex and multidimensional challenges communities and workers face as these power plants retire. The unique insights from the Minnesota Host Community Report has prompted CEE to be vocal supporters of legislation that assists communities during this transition. I'd like to acknowledge last session, thank you to legislation authored by Senator Housley. It established the Minnesota Energy Transition Legacy Office and Advisory Committee. This established and created a single point of contact for host communities, which creates efficiencies and opportunities to leverage coordinated assistance. Senate File 3715 complements that legislation by providing funding assistance needed for host communities to create actionable plans, so they can position themselves to thrive beyond plant closures. So this bill is an important and continued step in supporting our power plant communities and their workers. So thank you, Senator Matthews, for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you. Any questions for Senator Matthews or his testifiers? Senator Housley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Senator Matthews and everybody that's at the table for bringing this bill. It is so important for those communities, and you all know I'm in one of them too. Oak Park Heights has the King plant decommissioning, and it was not supposed to happen until 2040, and now it's 2028, so 12 years earlier than they were ready for, so it's kind of got everybody in a bit of a panic. So this is a huge bill for those communities. So thank you so much, Senator Matthews, and everybody for testifying today. Thanks.
Just a couple of questions. So as I recall, Senator Matthews, you and I used to sit on the Energy Committee. I thought there was funding coming out of the RDA. Is this to supplement that funding, or is that no longer available?
Mr. Chair and committee members, my understanding is that the $2 million was already used with the first round of grants, so this would be for an additional round moving forward. And I don't know if Mr. Simonson may want to add to that.
Mr. Simonson.
Mr. Chair, the way this bill is written, it obviously appropriates money out of the general fund. The issue that we run into is that some of these host communities are outside the XL service territory, so becoming eligible for grant dollars provided solely by the RDA becomes problematic.
Makes sense. Thank you. And maybe some of the projects, you know, some of the efforts, maybe you could highlight specifically some of what you've done. And maybe I know we saw on the bonding tour, we stopped at Oak Park Heights. Maybe you can talk about some of the efforts that this funding will help help you complete.
Certainly, I'm happy to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So some of the work that we have initially completed was focused on a well-rounded approach to looking at residential, commercial, and industrial land. Our work was broken into two phases. The first phase of that was planning. We did comprehensive utility studies for water, sewer, as well as stormwater. We also did a long-term financial plan using a variety of resources that we had already completed. And then all of the information that we've done, housing studies, industrial land studies, et cetera, are being synthesized into our strategic plan document that will have some actionable steps on how we will continue to develop. In addition, we have a project moving forward called the Points at Cedar, which includes, it is a mix of residential and commercial in a 100-acre area that's in the middle of our city. It is a vacant, largely vacant piece of property that's surrounded entirely by development. And so we use some of this to figure out how we could best utilize that space to grow from within where we already have utilities and infrastructure. We also used it to create some additional shovel-ready industrial sites. We don't in any way anticipate that we're ever going to be able to replace XL with one industrial user. However, we want to try to build out our industrial park as best we can. Most of the most convenient sites have already been developed, which leaves then those more difficult places where it takes maybe a little bit more effort to get them to that shovel-ready status to be able to be used by private developers, and we want to do as much as we can in anticipation of that. So that's been a large component as well.
Senator Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know I've worked with Becker for many years since I first got elected to help on similar activities with the Becker Business Park and all of that. And perhaps if Ms. Flipson's still available and listening online, she could highlight specifically this particular latest round of grant funding and what it was utilized for.
Okay.
I'm still available.
Yeah.
So we received the $455,000 for design work. So in the 2020 bonding bill, the city of Becker was awarded funds for some water and sewer infrastructure improvement, and there was a gap in the full funding of that in order to make the project work. So we use these funds to help alleviate that financial need. In this design, the second half of the project, we broke it down into two large construction phases. So this is designing a very large water and sewer pipe that will run underneath Highway 10 and the railroad, which our engineers tell us is a very unique task and very hard to do. But we're working on that, and it'll create approximately 1,500 acres of developable property that we're able to use for business attraction. And then moving forward, what we would like to do in the future is actually a lot of what Rachel said. The communities work closely together, so we're learning from each other on what they've found most strategic to use moving forward. So the water and sewer comprehensive studies are likely what we would do next. We have our business park situated really well, but we know workforce is very important when attracting businesses. So what can we do to grow our residential neighborhoods and commercial areas and the necessary water and sewer on that side of the road, and having some of those plans firmed up is likely our next step there as well.
Okay, any other questions for our testifiers or Senator Matthews? Senator Matthews, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair, thank you so much for considering this bill. I know our communities have been putting this to good use and trying to prepare for a new phase of the city. And as these plants are winding their way down, they're working really hard to be well prepared to help those impacts moving forward. And this program goes a long way to help with that. So would appreciate your committee's support of the bill.
Okay, Well, members, Senate File 3715 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Matthews. Thank you for everybody for coming to testify today. Members, that concludes our business for today. We will be back in our normal room and in the Capitol on Monday. Until then, we'll stand adjourned. Thank you.